do whatever makes you happy, even if it don't make sense.
Yeah.
Like, as long as you know it makes you happy, then it don't matter what it means to anyone else. Like, and the only people, the people that are around you that, if you explain to them that it makes you happy, then the only the right people will support that. Like, anyone who says anything against it are obviously not the right people to be around you.
Welcome back. My guest today is the winner of 2019's SAS Who Dares Win Show, Mark Piatt. For anyone who watched the show, I've got no doubt you'll have been moved and inspired by Mark's story. Since the show, he's become a fantastic mental health advocate. And during the conversation today, he shares ways you can live a more purposeful and authentic lifestyle. I hope you enjoy. Let's go. Mark, it's great to have you on, mate. I remember watching you on SAS, Who Dares Wins, a couple of years ago. And, you know, I was blown away by your story and blown away by what you do. But, you know, not only that, you've recently just come off a 5-day 250K ultra. So how are you, mate?
Yeah, mate, I'm just about holding up. mate, honestly, that feels like a lifetime ago now. It's been a bit of a whirlwind, mate, since that show. So yeah, it's been cool, mate.
Let's start with the ultra, like 250K. What was it, in 5 days?
Yeah, so it was I ended up going wrong, mate. I ended up going wrong one of the days. I ended up doing an extra 14 kilometers on first day, which were like soul destroying. It was set to be 250 kilometers. It's not as much, like, obviously the distance is massive. But these kind of events are all mountain running, so every day you're just literally getting smashed by elevation as well. Which, you know, that's what's, I think, the real test of a true runner or a true, like, fell runner is like the elevation. The distance is they're equally just as tough, but I find that a bit more of a eating competition. than anything. So it's just whether you can get enough, like, carbs in there to keep that energy up that you can keep and that your body can hold up to the distance. Whereas the mountains and the elevation, I think, is a lot more about your mindset. And it just definitely takes its toll on you over, like, events like that. So
I've heard that before. It's like, it's to do with mindset a lot. You know, sometimes you've just got to let your mind, like, take you, or, like, it can be a good thing or a bad thing. What was the hardest thing about doing it?
I think it's hard to say, mate, because, you know, I think you'd be stupid if you went into stuff like that feeling nervous, even though I'm really confident that I've got the ability to do things like that. I've got the mindset, plus, you know, I train hard enough that I can do things like that.
Yeah.
But you always kind of go into them quite nervy. Like, when I went into SAS, I swear, I was the most nervous person. I believed I was the most nervous person on flight. It felt like everyone else were just oozing this confidence. And I honestly, like, doubting myself so much, where I was thinking, I don't belong here. Like, what am I doing here, kind of thing? Like, yeah. You know, everyone else were kind of peacocking, not in, like, a bad way, but I think we just naturally do that. We try to, like, intimidate each other. And it's same with these ultra events. I feel like you kind of go into them and you still feel like a novice. You still feel like you're going into them, you're dead nervous, you're, like, kind of eyeing up competition and who's there and whether you can actually stand toe-to-toe with any of people there. And I don't know, mate. Then it's kind of, I'd rather just be out there and rather just be doing it, kind of thing. Yeah. Sometimes in the, like, anticipation of what's to come and what is the bit that kind of eats you up, and that I think if you let it, it can fully destroy you, and it can, you know, that's the bit that I feel like if you can't control that, then nerves before, that it can take so much from you before you even go into them.
Hmm.
But yeah, the last one that I just did, on my way there, I listened to a podcast actually. It was a really, really clever one. We're talking all about ultra running. And these doctors were on it, and a big thing that really, like, resonated with me was they talked about how we now kind of delve into, like, the mind, the, you know, the 1% things. So, like, we talk about tapering and there's diet and, you know, do you train at this in this zone for so long and that zone for so long? And they were like saying that literally that they are like minute percentages that you're playing with, like 1-2% for a pro athlete as well. So they said when you start to dumb that down, the biggest percentage that you can improve in yourself is the self-belief, which is something like, I think they explained it like, it's like 10 to 25% of your performance is based along self-belief. But yet we spend so much time actually picking at all these little things, going, what trainers do you wear? What GPS watch you, you know, what shorts you got on? What supplements you're taking? How long do you taper for? How long do you prep before you do that run? And it says like, not that these are all things that are important, but they add little 1%, just 2% here and there. Whereas they were saying that the self-belief, if you can develop that self-belief in yourself, then you're going to see massive amounts of improvement in your training and in your ability of what you can and can't do.
And it's a massive thing, isn't it? I remember reading Ross Edgley's book when he swam around Great Britain, and he was talking about his mentality throughout it. He just knew that he had to go into it and have this element of self-belief that even people close to him couldn't believe what he was doing. And he said, I just went around with a smile, you know, because that's the only way I'm going to do it. I've got to be positive about it. Otherwise I'm never going to do it. So it's amazing thinking like that.
And I think part of it as well is if you're going to put yourself out there to do something that's a bit extreme or a bit, on them lines, then you've got to fully expect to feel something that's going to feel horrendous. Mm. And you've got to be comfortable with feeling that. Like, you know, you can't go into it and think, like Ross Edgley couldn't go into a swim like that and think, I'm going to just be able to like just cruise all the way around, I'll be absolutely fine. Mm. There's going to be like some, you're going to accept that there's going to be some real, real dark moments. And then it's how you react in them dark moments. Do you let it consume you? Do you put a smile on your face and invite it kind of thing and kind of go, come on then, let's see what you've got. Let's see what I've got. Let's see how far I can go. What is it? Is this going to be the thing that does stop me, or is it not? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's generally never, you can look back and it's never as bad as what you imagine it was. And then them things only make you stronger for the next thing and the next thing after that.
Yeah.
I believe that half the stuff we do is just, you know, it's massively based along like mindset. And then, you know, then it's if your body is actually got the ability to withstand that kind of training and that kind of punishment that you're going to put it under. And then I think biggest thing of it all is it's like, what does it mean? Like, you know, what does it mean to you? Like, why do you want to do it? What's your why? Or why are you doing it? That kind of thing. Like, if you're just doing it, like I've always said, if there were ever a point where I would during any event that I felt I were going to really damage myself, I would stop. 100% would stop, because I've seen people do it where they're so like, you know, they get summit fever. It's like, they've got to finish it. You've got to finish it at all costs. You've got to finish it. Whereas I've always said, I love running too much that I would ever damage my body enough that it stopped me from running for a period of time. I'd rather stop and just accept that something's gone wrong that time. But then it's same again. It's like, that might mean to some people that maybe that event don't mean that much to me than what it would to someone else who could run with a broken leg, that could be like Goggins style, you know, that it'd go full hardcore into anything to the point where they'll absolutely destroy themselves to get to that finish line.
Yeah. What cost though?
Yeah, that's how I kind of look at it, mate, where I think if running didn't mean as much to me as what it does, then possibly I get that way where I just go, I'll keep going until whatever. But yeah, I don't know. It's really complex, mate. And you really meet some interesting people, won't we?
Yeah, I've got such a fascination with it, because I just think that mindset that you need to develop for these ultra events is amazing. There've even been religious practices, I think, with like monks who do endurance events just to train their minds. I just find it fascinating. What got you into it then? Because you've done quite a few now. The one that blew my mind when I was scrolling through your Instagram last night was your 24-hour run.
Oh yeah, mate.
That sounds horrendous.
Yeah. Oh, it was disgusting, mate. That's like, so I kind of got like roped into that through a friend. So it's not my idea of fun, anything like that. And it's not really something that I'd particularly pick to do. And as a vendor, it's not something that I'd particularly encourage anyone to do either, because it is, you know, it's literally just mind-numbing for 24 hours. So my friend were doing it as a charity event, and his idea was to have every 2 hours someone new would come and run with him, you know, to kind of take his mind off it. And he phoned me up like maybe a week, 2 weeks before his event. And he's just like, oh, do you still want to come down and like have 2 hours running with me? I'm like, yeah, cool, mate. Yeah, definitely. And I said, how many people you got to run with? He went, well, at minute, this were bearing in mind, this was maybe 3 days before Christmas in December. You had, you know, about 6 hours a day, like. And he's like, yeah, I ain't got anyone to run with me now, so it's just you. So I was just like, mate, I'll just, you know, I'll do a lot with you. Because he was doing it for charity, and I felt bad for him. So I just said, yeah, I'll come down and just do full 24 with you and see how it goes. And, you know, same again, mate, you learn a lot about your body, how it works, how it functions, when it don't want to function. And mentally, yeah, that's probably one of the toughest things I've ever done, mate, I think. You know, just more the, like, the temptation to quit is just so high. Especially when you're doing it, there's just two of you, like there were literally just me and him there for 24 hours. Yeah, and it was, yeah, some weird moments during that. But yeah, that's, I wouldn't be rushing back to do anything like that in an hurry. It's not the reason that I run or all like that. I don't run, you know, for this like mental torture kind of stuff, what people are really into and testing that side of them. It's really interesting, and it's nice to know that if there's ever a reason that I have to run for 24 hours, I can do it. But yeah, it's not something that particularly like stands out to me as something that inspires me that much. But
how far did you cover?
I think we did just over 100 miles.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was, but I think I kind of went into it with a really, really relaxed, like, I didn't go into it with any kind of, I'd not done a great deal of training in particular. I'm not sure how you do train to run around a track for 24 hours. But I'd not really done any training. I kind of gone into it thinking it's not my challenge, it's my friend's challenge. I'm going there as sport. So I think even for me mentally, I'd kind of dumbed it down to a point where, I was never going to push myself to the absolute limit to get whatever I needed from it. And then that's probably the way that my mind's worked to kind of make it less painful. I'm not sure, but I feel like for me, the temptation to quit in that was so high.
Yeah.
Because I didn't feel any connection to it. I didn't feel a massive amount of purpose to why I was doing it. The charity side of it, you know, were amazing. But yeah, it were a weird... It probably, like I said, it was one of the only things that I've gone into feeling like it were possibly going to stop me. And again, it was just down to just pure mindset that I'd gone into it with such a relaxed mindset that when we were actually there and it started to get tough, you know, you were at 1-2 o'clock in the morning, you'd been running for 12, 13 hours and it were cold, it were wet, it were windy. And at this point, you know, you've kind of said everything you need to say to each other and there's nothing else to talk about. And for the majority of it, you're kind of opposite ends at track. You know, you're just running at your own pace at that point. And it's just a weird... I can remember looking. I think we had 4 hours left. And we were both sat down, like, having a bit of food. And we were both just literally going, what are we doing? Like, why don't we just go home? Like, what are we doing here? And then it was just... Yeah, it was just a weird moment where we both kind of said, look, we can't have done 20 hours and then go home.
Yeah,
and we set off again, and it was just honestly the longest 4 hours. As I always said, if I ever get told I've got 24 hours to live, I will literally go and do that event again because it'll be the longest 24 hours of my life.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was, mate. It felt like I've been there for a week. It was weird.
That's incredible. Honestly, I can't think of anything worse. But what a great thing to do, like almost for your mindset to show what you can do, isn't it? Fair play.
Yeah, and I think it's same again, mate. I think for majority of us that are not breaking records or not, you know, pro athletes, you know, as biggest limitation is that self-belief. You know what I mean? I spoke to someone today and he was like an older guy that was telling me he's doing a couch to 5K and his aspiration is to, there's a lake just around where I live and it's 2 kilometres long. And he's like, oh, I want to be able to do 3 or 4 laps of that, then go home. And it like blows my mind because I'm like, mate, you can go and do that. Like, surely you can get yourself around a lake 2 or 3 times. I know it might be so much easier for me to say, but I think you've just got to like believe that you can do it, man. Like, don't put so much pressure and doubt on something like that. Just get out and do it. And you know, like, sure, most people like know like Goggins stories, and you know, some bits of it I think are really clever, really good. And you know, he speaks about how he used to have this 1 mile mark from his house, and he used to try and get there, get home without stopping. And it's just that gradual build up and building that belief, that endurance, that, you know, like the guy now does 100 milers for fun, doesn't he? You know, and you think everyone started somewhere. Like, nobody leaped out of bed one day and just suddenly like went trotting off on like 250-kilometer 5-day ultra marathons. You know, it's like you set off somewhere and you build on it, and then, you know, they always said that the best athletes are the ones that can endure the boredom of training. You know what I mean? The event is the easy bit. Like, turning up for the event when you've done all the training, all the hard work, the hard bit is on that Sunday morning when it's raining, it's cold, and you get up out of bed and you go and do your run. Like, they're the bits where you want to quit. And that's what it's on about, like, speaking about enduring the boredom, where it's like, if you can get used to just doing them monotonous runs, you know, you can get used to eating the same food, just doing them like mundane things over and over again, you're gonna like build on that. The people that change constantly, change how they train, how they do things, how they eat, like, you're just asking for injuries when you're doing stuff like that, you know. But then it just goes straight back to what it is, what it means to you, what is it to you. Do you know, if what you want from it is, if you get enjoyment from doing all these different things, then I think just do whatever makes you happy, man, and just do that.
Exactly. What do you think your why is? Like, why do you do these events? Like, why did you go on SAS and do these ultras?
So SAS, I think for me, was just like, I'd never really watched the show before.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so it was kind of like a few friends that had kind of like set me up for it, really. So they sent off my application, and they put me forward for it. And then I kind of rolled with the process of the application. And I think all the way through it, I was kind of thinking, but I'm never going to go on it. I'm never going to do it, kind of thing. And at that time, I think having something to focus on was like just helping me so much, like putting me back into kind of routine. I had purpose to train, kind of things that I'd kind of lost during that period. Then it kind of put me back on track to doing things and having that purpose again. The SAS for me, I think, were just a way of like channeling just a lot of energy that I had at that moment, and channeling it into something that was just more positive for me than anything. Whereas the ultra stuff and the runs that I do now, like, that's just pure enjoyment. And like you know, the like, it takes me to some really dark places sometimes. Like, you know, you really like, I like to compete in them, so I like to really push myself. But I feel like it's a proper cliche, but that is definitely where you figure out who you are. And you grow from that. Like, you know, I feel like again, I feel like it is a cliche, but when you're in them moments, that's when you find out what you really matter, who you really are. You know what I mean? We all can walk around and you know, and say, if someone punched me in the face, I'd punch them back. But unless someone does punch you in the face, you've no idea how you're going to react in that, whether you're going to curl up in a ball or whether you're actually going to stand and throw punches back. Like, you know, it's so much easier to say how you'd react to these things. So it's like, the reason I do it, I think, is to almost to see how I react when I am in them places, and what I'm actually made of.
Exactly. Yeah. I've heard you say on another podcast, emotion can either be negative or positive. You just got to use it in the right way. And sometimes that's all it is, isn't it? You've got to use it in a positive way to keep you going in those dark times when you are struggling at mile 20 out of a 50 mile ultra or something like that.
Mate, yeah. And all you want to do is, you know, like, I think just by nature, you're out there. Like, we've done plenty of these races where you know, you get told it's 55 kilometers, and then you get to 45 and someone reminds you that it's 57, not 55, that they messed up marking the course.
Yeah.
And everybody's furious. Everyone's kicking off. And I'm like, I just think, well, my mindset is, if I went to Pizza Hut and ordered a pizza and they brought me a pizza and a half out, I'd be buzzing. I've got more for my money. And that's all, they're just giving us more for us money. But yeah, I just think it's whatever you want it to be. You can either use it like to aid you, or you can use it and it'll just fight against you constantly.
Yeah.
You know, so you can either, like, whichever way you want it is, you can either take it and you can get really angry. And for some people, getting angry is the way that it gets them out of situations. And for other people, getting angry will just literally zap them everything they've got.
What I found interesting on SAS, I'm not sure if it was the series you were on it, but I'm sure they did this to you as well, was you were doing an event or a challenge, and then you thought it would be over, but then they'd either continue the challenge or the truck would go off and you'd have to make your way back to camp, or it was like a false ending, I think Ant Middleton called it. And that's how they train the SAS. Like, it's a mindset thing when you think it's all over, but suddenly it's not. So that, like, they use it in the military as well, don't they?
Hey, majority of that. So I'd say what you actually get to see on TV is probably like 60%, 50% of what actually goes off there.
Right.
And it's really, really authentic. Like, the way the you know, the directed staff kind of run the show, it's like really authentic. And from the minute you get in there, you forget that it's a TV show. You just literally feel like you're on a course, you're on a selection course. And it's all mindset. It's all just playing where you have no idea, you know, when you're going to eat, when you're going to sleep, you know, when you'll get any kind of rest time, whether you'll get any dry clothes. Everything is took out of your control. You mean, you're a number, you're not even a name anymore. So everything's gone. And it's just, you know, you can feel it to yourself. Like, you can feel, you know what I mean? They used to take me in like every other day for interrogation. And you know, without blowing me on trumpet, I was smashing everything physically that they were putting in front of me. But then Ant would get me in and he'd be like, tomorrow you're going home. He's like, I know you're only giving 70%. We don't want people to give 70%. We want people to give 100%. He's like, so we're fed up here. You're going home. And I'd be like, what? Or I'm absolutely like giving everything. So the next day I go out and I'd be like, well, I'm going to absolutely destroy this one. And if I'm going home, I'm going to just go as hard as I can. And I'd go as hard as I could. And, you know, I'd finish in front and he'd never look at me, never say anything, and just walk off. And then that would be, the next day he'd get me in and do it again. And you're like, and it was just a way of just playing with you constantly, you know.
Is that the hardest bit, the mind games?
Yeah, mate, it is. It's just, it's so, you're just so on edge. Like, you know, I mean, the amount of times where, you know, they could say, right, go back to your barracks, and you go back, and then sometimes within half an hour you'd be going back outside, and then other times you could have 2 hours and you think, I could have slept, I could have done it. But you're just so on edge that it's like, I've no idea what's coming, whether someone's going to burst through the door in the next 10 minutes. So I can't switch off enough to sleep. And I think when you realise, obviously, the best soldiers that obviously go through that kind of process, but on a longer period, become more accustomed to them, to being in them situations where, you know, that they can literally fall asleep at drop of an hour, you know, where they just become relaxed in situations where most people still feel anxious and still feel on edge. So, like, you know, to get that like short insight into that world, it's like, it's cool, mate. Like, it's brutal, man.
How did you react to it then? As soon as you got there, you said, obviously, you don't have a name anymore. It's all a number. And then it's just, you know, we only see 50, 60%, like you said. What was that first initial bit like? How did everyone react to it?
It's just a big shock. Like, from the minute they get you there, it's kind of, you know, you set off running. Like, you know, they did for us. The minute they came into contact with us, that were it. We were set off running up a mountain. Yeah. And you'd literally, you'd no idea what were going off. And it was just literally just like kind of dropping into cold water and just seeing whether you swam or whether you sat in it kind of thing. And you could see for a lot of people, even myself included, it's like at that point, it were like, it's real, you know, it's like, this ain't going to be easy. This ain't going to be, you know, a walk in park. And it's that realization then, and to almost to a degree where they kind of really up it at that level to like shake you up. But yeah, then the physical side of it, I don't think ever really, really like relaxed, you know. They can batter you within a couple of days. Physically, everyone were, you know, you were absolutely battered from just the repetition of it. You know, then you're running on probably less food than what you'd normally have for stuff like that. And everything's, yeah, just uncomfortable like that. So it's just about, it's just making you feel very uncomfortable and just seeing how you react when you're there.
Yeah. I think from watching it, the mental games when you're in that house at the end and you're being interrogated, was that, yeah, for you, was that like one of the most difficult parts?
I'd say that was probably the worst part.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, and then, but then there's like accumulation of things that have led to that point. You know what I mean? By that point, we'd done like 11, 12 days of being thrashed around up mountains at altitude, in cold water, out cold water. But then when you get to that point, you're already a bit smashed up at that point. Yeah. And we went in, I think we did 28 hours in interrogation. And the stress positions were just like, yeah, just torturing. And you know, your hip flexors were pretty much non-existent at that point. So like trying to put you in a position that you're probably sitting quite comfortably, you know, most days, it would just, yeah, like torture. Plus then you've got the sound, you know, constantly on a loop. Like I remember even like my ears were aching. Like, you know, you've no idea of time. And the first, so I think it was about 1 o'clock in the morning that we went into interrogation. And I can remember, you know, it must have been 5-6 o'clock in the morning and it was just so cold. Like you were just, like you just felt your entire body were just shaking. And then you were kind of like judging it by that, by like, I can remember like warming up and I was thinking it must be around 12 o'clock. It's just suddenly got a little bit warmer. But yeah, that was brutal. Like, yeah, there were a point where I can remember thinking, like there, where I just thought, what am I doing? What am I trying to prove? Even if I left now, like, you know, I ain't got anything to prove to anyone anymore. Yeah, and you've no idea if anybody's left, if you know, of what is going off at all. But yeah, that bit, well, like I said, for me, I think the worst part, like physically, I feel like I could kind of get away with stuff like that and churn away things like that. Where's that? Yeah, that would just, majority would just mentally. And that's where I feel like the women were just so much stronger at really? That point. Yeah, I feel like the women could withstand interrogation more comfortable than what that we could, whether that were just the way that they like showed it, but it just came across that way. Like I were in absolute bits and it felt like some of the other girls were just like kind of just chilled in it all. But yeah, that part were tough.
They're really good at making people quit and doubt themselves. Did you ever get to a point where you thought, bloody hell, I'm gonna quit here? Like I've had enough.
Like I said, the only part was during interrogation.
Yeah.
It was getting really tough. And then they kind of spotlighted Milo at that point and were kind of using Milo against me and stuff like that to kind of, you know, that they were doing things to him. You know, it were all like kind of like this mental battle that they were trying to put on you. Yeah, before, like, I think the doubt is always there in your head, like, constantly, you know, like, niggling at you. And it's like, same again, whether you invite it in and let it develop and grow, or whether you just bat it off and just, like, you know, believe in yourself that you are, you know, there's a reason you're still there and that you have got still got more to prove. But yeah, I'd say pretty much all the way through it, there's an element of doubt in your mind where, you know you can stop it at any point, you know. Yeah. And once it gets past them first few days, I think especially the men, I feel like we kind of, you know, using a lot of ego where it's like, I don't want to be the first person to quit kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I always feel like the women made the men stronger to a degree.
Okay.
Because I feel like some of the men stayed in longer because, you know, like maybe the ego again didn't want to quit before the women. But then for me, I was thinking, well, that's making you stronger because if it were old men, you might have quit by now, because it's men and women, you're staying in longer, which were, you know, it was quite interesting to see at, like, that. I think the women kind of pushed the men to keep battling probably longer than what they would have done.
Yeah, that's interesting. And what was it like having women on the show? Because that was one of the first years that they were allowed on. And there was a bit of almost controversy before the show, thinking, how are they going to be treated equally? Are they going to be treated differently? Yeah. You know, it was really interesting. I remember reading Ant's book about it, and his rationale towards it was spot on, really. You know, in a war zone, you know, there's not going to be any discrimination. So how did you find that?
Same. I think he kind of went into it maybe expecting that there would have been a bit more lenient towards the women.
Yeah.
But yeah, in my experience, I never saw anything like that. I felt like everyone would tread. If anything, I feel like the women had more to prove, and they kind of made that obvious, that they wanted the women to prove that letting them come and take part in it was the right decision.
Yeah.
Which almost then, I think, put an element of pressure on them to prove it to every other woman that's sat at home watching. But I never felt like they got treated any different. They got, you know, like I said, if anything, it would probably, rather than being a something that were positive towards them, it was probably more negative, that there were a bit more pressure on them, especially at first, to kind of prove themselves that they could stand with the men and they could do things as just as good as the men. But yeah, I think after a few hours, you're just so engrossed in it all, and your priority is literally looking after yourself, and you know, that you, there were no, this like kind of, I don't know, everyone just a person in there to me, where I just thought you didn't have time or like the capacity in your brain to like think that, you know, there were a difference between like men and women being there. It was just kind of heads down and just do whatever you needed to do. But yeah, for me, I definitely don't think the women were treated any different. They were, yeah, they were just treated just as horrible as us.
And since the show, you've been seen as like a fantastic mental health advocate because of, you know, what you've been through. So my question is, for that, do you have habits now that you go to every day that ensure you're living more purposefully and you're almost protecting that mental health? Because there's going to be people listening now and thinking, they might be going through a dark place and they're thinking, well, what can I do? You know, what does Mark do?
Yeah, I think for me, it's like, it's the first thing I, like, it sounds like a nothing thing, but the first thing I do every day is make me bed. As soon as I get out of bed, make me bed. And the way I look at it is like, that's one thing I've done that day that I've done well, and it ticked it off. That, and then I think I set off my day and I get a tick straight away. So the minute I get up, I make me bed, and I've already set up my day off. I've done something positive that day. So that's like one thing that, like, it sounds really, maybe it sounds a bit stupid, but I just feel like for me, just them little things like that, they kind of then set you up for the day. You know, that if I'm up on time and I make my bed and, you know, and I do things like that. The big one for me is I started running in the morning. So I get up and even sometimes it's literally, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour, but I just get outside and, you know, I kind of do it religiously now. And the amount of times I wake up and I'm just like, oh man, I just turn my alarm off and go back to sleep. Like, have another 20 minutes. And I, you know, I've made a real good habit of just forcing myself out of bed and getting out there. And I feel like that has benefited me like so much. Just like, I've always said that whenever I've had any kind of problems, issues, is like, for me, running is such a like big release from it. Puts a lot of things in perspective for me. And whenever I leave, I know I can come back and I'll always feel better. Even if it's like 1%, I'll always feel better than when I left.
Yeah.
So for me now, like I said, I set my day off where I've made my bed, I go out for a run. And at the end of that run, it don't matter if I've done 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, I feel better that day. I feel set up and ready for that day.
Yeah.
And probably the last thing I've just said to people is just find that thing that you actually love. Like, find it. Don't, I feel like more so now than ever, like through social media and things like that, we're not sure of ourselves anymore. I don't feel like people truly know who they are or what they actually love. I think they see things and think, well, I should like running. I should like CrossFit or whatever it is, people see these things and go, but I should like these. You know, I mean, people message me and ask me, and they'll say, oh, I'm running London Marathon, but I hate running. I don't know what to do. I'm like, don't run London Marathon then, because I would never say to someone, if you hate doing it,
yeah,
like, I wouldn't do something I hate doing just to do it because I feel like that's what I should be doing. If you love knitting, go and sit and knit for an hour. Like, do whatever it is, but I feel like put yourself out there to find what it is that you actually love and that you enjoy doing.
And
you know, I mean, that's probably a lot more complex and a lot more harder to figure out than what it sounds. But I think do things to actually figure out who you are. And for me, like I said, the running's always been a big part of my life. And it's only grown and grown and grown. And I feel like now that's where I go to grow. And that's where I go to, I put myself, that if I need to figure out a bit of something about myself. That's what I'd kind of say. I don't know if that makes any sense to people.
It does perfectly. You know, I looked at, you know, your post as well. And the one post I really, really liked was when I think you're in the mountain with your dog. And it was like, I think the caption was, you know, happiness is an inside job. And that's completely right. It is an inside job. And sometimes you've got to find, like you said, find the thing that makes you happy and just go and do it and not look at what other people are doing and thinking, maybe I should be enjoying that. You think, no, if that makes you happy, you go and do it.
I feel like, I think more so, like this generation more than anything is like, you know, we're under so much pressure to, you know, every day you wake up, you look at a device, you look at anything, and it tells you the things that you should have, should want. That's all we're kind of bombarded with every single day. You should be traveling here, you should be doing this, you should have these clothes, this car, that job. And I feel like now everyone who I meet is successful. Like, I feel like everyone who I meet has got this amazing job, this amazing career, this amazing, like everyone is just, I feel like we are all like succeeding at minute. Like, but then we're also like, we're never stopping to actually like appreciate anything that's going off. And then, and as well, like, you know what I mean? It's another cliche, but all them things do not equal happiness. Like you can be this rich, powerful, can have this car, have all these things. But when, you know, when it comes to end, nobody will ever be at your funeral and turn around and go, oh, Tom, yeah, you had a cool car, didn't it? You know, it's like, that'll mean nothing at that point. If they turn around and go, Tom, like, you know, he was such an amazing, well-traveled, like really understood himself, you know, really put himself out there. Like they're the things that you surely want people to say about you when it comes to it. So I think for me, I just think it's like, you know, spending some actual time to figure out you are who you are. And you might not actually like that person at first. You might not, you know, you might not like what you have to do to figure out who you are, you know, the things you'd have to try. But I just think if you don't like something, it don't mean you have to do it just to fit in.
And that's what some people are scared of. It's almost like a rebellious act by not conforming and not fitting in. Yeah. You know, just because X, Y, and Z likes, I don't know, going out drinking every Saturday night. Yeah, great. It's nice to have a few drinks, but do you want to do it every Saturday? Or would you rather get up fresh on a Sunday and do things you genuinely enjoy? And, you know, people are chasing that. I think they're chasing burnout. You know, they're looking for those tangible things, and it's only working Monday to Friday, getting burnt out, and just Saturday, Sunday is, well, what are you doing that day? You know, life is for living 7 days a week. And I know time is not on people's side sometimes, but I think in every single day, you've got to find stuff that you genuinely, genuinely enjoy, because I mean, what's the point?
Yeah. Oh, mate, massively. It's like, and I feel like the older you get, the more you expose yourself to all these things, the more life does become a lot simpler. Do you know what I mean? You start to look and go, well, I don't, you know what I mean? I've just spent 6 days in a tent. And after 6 days in a tent, you're fairly comfortable in it. And you know what I mean? I was going to toilet in a bin bag. And you sit there and go, don't actually need all these things. Like, you know, it's really excessive now. And like you said, I feel like you're chasing summer. You're chasing this impossible thing. And they are just things. Like, at end of it all, they're just, like, you know, you're working and you're doing all these extra things just to get more things. And you're like, then after that, there's just even more and more. It's like, it's a never ending chase, you know, which is, it's fair enough. Again, if that's what you generally believe you like, that is fair enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, don't think, I just don't think that's the meaning why we're here. Just don't.
No, I get you completely. You know, I think if you kind of read any self-development book and they speak about habits that can change your day and change like how you're thinking, your mindset, it's a lot with what you said. You know, what I do, same as you, make your bed, go for a cold shower, you know, go for a walk, wake up, go into some nature, go to the gym, you know, those little things, they're so simple. They're so effective. Yeah. Sometimes it seems quite arduous to go out and do them when you've had a bit of a rubbish day, but it makes such a big difference. And then you just think, what a difference that's made to your mood in your day. And then like we spoke about earlier with David Goggins, the compound effect, the 1 mile, then it gets more before you realize you're someone else, you're a better person for it.
Definitely, mate. I like 100% agree with that. But it is a lot easier to say it than it is to do it. And when you get in 100%. Them bad places and then them bad routines, you know, I mean, the temptation to not do them things, even though you can sit there and you hand on heart know the benefit. Like you can sit there and go, I know if I go in that gym now, I'm going to be so feel so much better when I come out. I'm going to be so happy that I did it. But yet there's still a part of us that wants to stop you from taking that step.
Yeah.
And then again, I think a massive part of it's just like confidence, to have that confidence to just believe you ain't got to fit in with everyone else. You know what I mean? That you can stand with people and, you know, you can turn to friends and turn around and go, I don't want to go out drinking on a Saturday night or anymore because that's just don't make me happy. Whereas I feel like people find that bit hard to just be themselves, that they want to fit in, they want to have these friends and fit in these circles. And it is really difficult to do. And yeah. I feel like it's so much easier to just kind of go, I'll just do it because it makes life easier. It means I've got a circle of friends. It means I've got this, that, and other. But yeah, I just think you've got to find what really ticks you, you know, gets you going, like what really makes you happy. And I feel like once you can figure that out, things become simpler then. Mm. Like you see things different. Feel things different. Like I've always said, I think the purpose we're here is to feel everything, like not just the good things. Like, you know what I mean? Like when you think of like love and things like that, like people think of love and it's like all good. It's like all like, it's all the things that, you know, it makes you feel happy. It makes you feel excited, all these positive things. Whereas I think love is like the person that you truly love can make you angry, can make you upset, can make you frustrated, you know, they can make you feel all the good things but all the bad things at the same time. And I feel like that's why we're here, to feel everything, but some things we avoid so much because we don't want to feel it, and you don't want other people to feel them things. Like we try to, like, you know, mask people and keep people away from anything that's going to be negative, like on it. Whereas, you know, I mean, as morbid as it sounds, like something bad is coming to every single person at some point in their life. Yeah. And if we hide people from the little things, the big things become even bigger. And I just feel like sometimes, you know what, you've got to sit back and endure the pain and sit and sometimes put a smile on your face, like we were saying earlier with Ross Edgley and stuff, and put that smile on your face and kind of invite it and go, let's see what I am made of. Let's see how I react to this. Like, let's see, you know, whether I am a man or not.
Yeah, that's so true. Do you think there's a piece of advice that you've ever been given that you always live by every day?
I'm not sure if I live by it every day, but I think same along them lines, like, you know, do whatever makes you happy, even if it don't make sense.
Yeah.
Like, as long as you know it makes you happy, then it don't matter what it means to anyone else. Like, and the only people, the people that are around you, that if you explain to them that it makes you happy, then the only the right people will support that. Like anyone who says anything against it are obviously not the right people to be around you.
Exactly.
That's what I'd say. Just find your why, find what makes you tick, and go after that.
And that's a hard lesson, isn't it, that people go through, is that they're going to be either judged possibly by doing things that they enjoy doing. They possibly lose people because they won't understand what that individual is trying to do or why they're doing it. Yeah. So it's a hard lesson in life to go through, but it's such a rewarding one because at the end of the day, you'll be your authentic self because of it.
Yeah. But it's weird, mate, because I had this conversation with a friend a few weeks back and I said to him, what's the worst thing that's ever happened in your life? And he said when he were maybe 12 or 11, his dad were at work and his dad got an injury. He dropped a screw in his eye and his dad had to go to hospital and have his eye removed and he had to be operated on. And this, you know, this was 30, 40 years ago. And he said his dad was self-employed. He says they lost the home and they had to go and move in with his grandparents. And he said for like a 11, 12-year-old boy, he said it was really traumatic. It felt really traumatic for him at that time. He said his dad was in hospital for like 6 months. And he said that was probably the worst period of his life, the worst thing that ever happened to him. Then I said, do you feel like you grew from that? And he's like, yeah, 100%. I came a lot stronger and a lot more like, aware of what my mum and my grandparents, my dad did for me and stuff like that. And I said, if you could go back in time, would you change that? He went, no, 100%. I'd stay because the way that I grew from it was unbelievable. And the guy has got a boy that's 11, 12 year old. And I said, would you wish that on your boy? And he went, no, not 100%. I said, but you've just said it's the thing that made you grow the most in life, but yet you wouldn't wish it on someone. And it's just a bit like, it blows my mind a bit because it's like the things that help you grow the most are traumatic.
Yeah.
But yet we would never wish that kind of pain on anyone. But yet we want everyone to grow. We want everyone to be stronger. And I just think it's a really hard thing to like dice with, you know, as in, along them lines again, where you think we want, like, you know, you want to figure yourself out, you want to push yourself and find out who you really are. Yeah. But then at the same time, I feel like we're always kind of shielding each other from feeling any kind of pain.
Exactly. Everyone's trying to hide from discomfort and hide from like hard times and the setbacks. Yeah. You don't want to face it. You know, I think people, COVID hasn't helped, that they're being overly cautious now because of things. But then, you know, you could go back to the old quote, you grow through what you go through. But then you think, like your friend said, it's probably changed him for the better. But then if you look back and think, oh, well, I wouldn't want to go through that again, but it makes you a better person. So it's such a catch 22.
It's tough, but like I said, I think it all just goes back to that you've just got to, sometimes if you are going through something, is stand up to it and be brave and, you know, and literally stand toe to toe with it. And, you know, it is what it is. You can, you know, you can fight for as long as you want to fight. And the outcome, I feel, is always what's meant to be, you know.
Exactly.
I feel like we have like less control over his destiny than what we actually believe, that like things happen regardless. So I think you can either invite it and fight, or you can let it consume you and it'll just sink you.
Yeah. I listened to this on a podcast about risk and people who are maybe stagnant, not enjoying their lives, their work, whatever. They stay because it's comfortable. It's what they know, but they're not happy.
Yeah.
And then I heard someone else say, well, it's actually more of a risk staying in that situation because you're not growing, you're not learning. So you just almost got to decide your own risk and your own hardships. Like, what do you want from it? Are you going to risk potentially being happy, or are you going to risk staying where you are? You know, and it's very much on the, you know, personal preference and how willing you are to embrace the discomfort to get to the comfort.
And the more discomfort I feel like that you do embrace, the more comfortable you become with them. You know, people can then make them little decisions that could be, you know, it's all relative, isn't it? It's like, I could break a nail and you could break a leg, but I could be more traumatized from breaking a nail than what you are from breaking a leg, depending on what you have been through. And when people speak about, you know, a leap of faith and all this, is like, we pull it up to be this big empowering thing that people are really brave. And you're like, no, it's opposite, man. People that take a leap of faith, it's like the most scary thing in the world, isn't it? It's like,
it is,
you know, to leap into the unknown is like, it takes a lot of courage, but that person is not courageous at that point. They're absolutely petrified and they're doing it, you know, not knowing the outcome. And that's them fighting back. And I think sometimes like people feel like they can't take a leap of faith because they feel like they're not maybe courageous or they're not brave or they're not all these things. And you think, no, you don't. Then people that do them things, they're only courageous and brave afterwards when the end thing is positive, you know. Before it, like all these people that have done amazing things are you know, are really chastised at what they're doing at time. They should stay where they are because it's comfortable. But yeah, I think for me, it's so scary, isn't it, to change or to take these leap of faith.
Yeah, it is, but it's a positive one. So what's next then? What is your next endurance challenge? Have you decided yet, or is it just like recover from this one first?
Yeah, so Saturday I'm flying to France, so I'm going to do the MCC.
Oh, wow.
So it's at Chamonix, yeah. So that's like another, I say it's all day, it's a 40-kilometer race, that one. So the UTMB is like massive, has loads of different events now. It's like a week-long like kind of running festival in Chamonix, which, like, you know, it's one of the most beautiful places on the planet. So I'm flying there on Saturday, you know, all being well, like COVID stuff. So I'm going to run on Monday. And then after that, I'm doing a charity bike ride from Land's End to John O'Groats. So it's cycling 100 miles a day for 10 days.
Wow.
From top to bottom. From bottom to top, sorry.
Oh, right. Okay. That's incredible. Yeah. So not much rest then before.
No, mate. No. And it's going to be interesting because I love cycling. I really, really love cycling. But generally, you know, if you'd have looked at like kind of like a perfect training plan, I definitely haven't had it. And I'm going to maybe get a good 3 weeks of just really being able to get my legs going. So it'd be interesting to see how I get on. But again, I think it's just going to come down to a lot, and it's just gritting it out on them days.
Exactly. Mark, good luck on that, mate. I have no doubt you'll smash it on both of them. And thank you for coming on the podcast today. It's been great to speak to you, and I'm sure this is going to help a lot of people. So thanks, mate.
Yeah, I hope so, mate. Thank you. Cheers, pal.